So this is going to be another talk about experiments by a theorist. I should say right out, we have no MHD results yet. We're hoping to take measurements in gallium in the fall. It's taken us a little longer to get going, although I think my colleague Hantao Ji here, who's the real scientific PI of this experiment, may have been the first to suggest in public that it might really be feasible to reproduce MRI in the lab. It's been slow to get going because at Princeton we have no past experience with liquid metal MHD experiments, so we've had to start from scratch. And of course the usual problems with underfunding, understaffing, and so forth. So in case it gets lost in the noise, here's a quick overview of the experiment, the essential parameters. It's a couette flow, which as you call is a flow between concentric cylinders. We chose this geometry because we hope to more nearly approximate the conditions that these theorists imagine astrophysical disks to be in, where the background state is one on which the rotation is approximately constant on cylinders, and the magnetic field, well, the angular velocity is constant on field lines. So we're starting from an equilibrium. We also wanted to produce a stable, hydrodynamically stable profile of angular momentum. So that requires us to be able to drive both inner and outer cylinders in the same direction. We impose, of course, a magnetic field parallel to the rotation axis. Theoretically, that is the configuration in which one expects the strongest MRI instabilities, and the first instabilities you expect to see are axisymmetric. Now, a real accretion disk has a free boundary. Laboratory experiments do not. The pressure difference at full rotation between the inner and outer cylinder will be about 25 or 26 atmospheres. So we can't have a free boundary on the upper surface. It has to be solid. Ideally, we would make the cylinders very much longer than the gap width. Now, we can't make the gap width small because magnetic diffusion would then completely kill the instability. It has to be a wide gap. If we were to make the usual rule of thumb is that you want the cylinder in hydrodynamic couette flow experiments is you want the cylinder heights to be some 50 times the gap width. So for a 10 centimeter gap width, that would require us to have a height of 5 meters, which would be awkward. More importantly, it would be extremely expensive. Gallium costs hundreds of dollars a kilogram. We have about 250 kilograms of this stuff, but so. Sodium is cheaper, much cheaper. It's an abundant material. But the Princeton Plasma Physics Laboratory, where this experiment is being done, is a Department of Energy lab, and they are very concerned with safety. So is my experimental colleague. He just didn't want to deal with sodium. Material's cheap, but not all the safety precautions that you have to take to control it. So what we've done instead is to split the end caps into two annuli, which are independently driven. So there are a total of 4 angular velocities in this system and 4 motors. So we can cause these end caps to rotate at angular velocities which are intermediate between the outer two, and thereby reduce somewhat, I believe, the boundary effects, Ekman circulation. The flow is expected to be characterized by certain dimensionless numbers, which we've already met today, and I'd like to repeat them anyway. Again, because of the very small magnetic Prandtl number, in order to get to magnetic Reynolds numbers, of order a few tens, you have many choices for how to define these numbers. This is how we do it, which I believe is the most common. It's based on the linear velocity of the inner cylinder, the inner radius R1 times the inner angular velocity, gap width, and the diffusivity. In order to get that to be of order a few tens, we have to be operating in a regime where the fluid Reynolds number is something like 10 to the 7, which is essentially unexplored territory in couette flow experiments. And then there's the Lindquist number, in which you take the magnetic Reynolds number, but you replace the linear speed of the inner cylinder by the Alphane speed. So this is a measure of magnetic field. In astrophysics, people are pretty casual about how they use these terms. Sometimes this is called magnetic Reynolds number, and sound speed sometimes comes in. Okay, so why would you want to do an experiment like this? I mean, if you weren't already interested in doing a dynamo experiment, for example. The theoretical linear analysis, especially in the axisymmetric case with a uniform axial field, is really very simple. And any graduate student who knows the MHD equation should be able to derive this in under an hour, you know, on an exam or something, right? No fancy resonances. So it would be very surprising if the instability doesn't, you know, didn't exist. It would really shake our confidence, I think. But there is a sort of because it's there syndrome. You know, it's so important in astrophysics, it would be nice to see it terrestrially. More scientifically, you know, we will be able to go a little bit beyond the linear regime. Our instability will have to saturate somehow if we keep driving the cylinders. We expect also about three linear modes to be destabilized. So there's some possibility for interesting nonlinear developments. The extent to which those developments have anything to do with what happens in disks is open to question. Okay. But still interesting to do. The very low Prandtl numbers are maybe a little bit of a sharper motivation. These are very low in this material, as they sometimes are in astrophysics, probably in protostellar disk, for example, where the resistivity is probably relatively high, though highly uncertain. Mark Wardle and I were talking about that this morning. And the viscosity is quite small. It's a essentially, this low number means that there's structure on the velocity field, and the velocity field on scales very much smaller than the scales in which there are magnetic fluctuations. There are many hydrodynamic degrees of freedom, effectively, compared to the number of magnetic ones. We keep saying in our proposal that we will benchmark astrophysical codes. You know, didn't believe in Zeus before, we'll prove it first. Well, we're actually doing that. We've adapted Zeus to model our experiment. Odd thing to do from the point of view of the geophysics community. Here we have an incompressible flow, which is highly resistive. Zeus is designed for compressible flows, and there's no explicit resistivity in virgin Zeus, or even viscosity, apart from the bulk of stuff needed to handle shocks. But many people, including ourselves, have modified the code to include those effects. And if we run it at low Mach number, we actually do extremely well at modeling incompressible flow. Another very interesting reason to pursue this is the possibility of nonlinear hydrodynamic instabilities. It is uncertain whether MRI is always available when needed in astrophysical disks. Protostellar disks in particular, but also dwarf Novian quiescence might be too resistive to support it. And the question is there any alternative way of producing turbulence in angular momentum transport? And so it's been suggested that at very high fluid Reynolds number, even these centrifugally stable flows, flows with angular momentum increasing outwards, might be turbulent. And nobody really knows, because one can't reach those Reynolds numbers in simulation, in 3D, you have to do it in 3D. And experimentally, there's been very, very little work in centrifugally stable flows at high Reynolds number. One can count the number of relevant experiments on the fingers of one hand, even if you're missing a couple of fingers. Okay. I think I've said this. remind you what a couette flow is, a flow between eccentric cylinders. If the cylinders were infinitely long, if only, and when we're in a steady state, and the only transport of angular momentum were viscous, then the angular velocity profile would take this form, characterized by two constants, which have to be chosen to match the angular velocities of the two cylinders. Okay? So if A were zero, for example, you get constant angular momentum, constant vorticity. The centrifugal instability requires that the derivative of the square of the angular momentum, or the square of the vorticity, be stability requires that this be positive. So I've called this combination kappa squared. Kappa is, to astrophysicists, the epicyclic frequency associated with this flow. It provides us a stabilizing force against radial displacements. So for us, that means the product of A and B have to be positive, or in other words, the specific angular momentum of the outer cylinder needs to be greater than that of the inner cylinder for hydrodynamics axisymmetric linear stability. linear stability. Okay, so this is quite apart from the question whether there might be non-linear turbulence. Almost all wet flow experiments operate in a regime where kappa squared is negative. And in that case, it's possible to have stability if the viscous effects are strong enough, so one talks about a Taylor number, as shown. But we want to be in a regime where kappa squared is positive, yet the angular velocity is decreasing, because that's qualitatively similar to disks. Okay, nonlinear hydro. The relevant experiments, well, I may have left one out, are shown up there in the top. The most recent is reported by Denis Ricard in his PhD thesis, 2001, which you can find on the web, didn't include the URL in French. I stole this figure from that thesis. So what's plotted here, you may not be able to read it, is the rotation speed of the inner cylinder on the vertical axis and the outer cylinder on the horizontal axis, expressed as Reynolds numbers, running from 0 to about 6.5 × 10⁴. And so when the cylinders rotate at the same angular velocity, the system is on this diagonal line. The dark shaded region is hydrodynamically, axisymmetrically unstable and fully turbulent. I've added a red line indicating the locus of Keplerian states. Okay. And the light shaded regions, which you can barely see, are reported by this experiment to have been seen, based on laser velocimetry, to be turbulent, even though they are regions of positive angular momentum gradient. And the most interesting is this region here, which almost reaches the Keplerian line, and the boundary there is a little bit curved, so it looks like it would if you went high enough. Now this experiment had a gap width of 1 centimeter, my French is good enough. The 3.5 centimeter inner cylinder, the inner radius of the outer cylinder seems to have been 4.5 centimeters, length of 38. Okay, so it was a fairly long geometry. But now, based on the older experiments, Ricard and Zahn, a few years before this thesis came out, deduced that even in centrifugally stable flows, there should be a turbulent viscosity in the bulk. So this is based on the torque measurements of Vent and Taylor. With this kind of behavior, beta, a dimensionless parameter, basically the reciprocal of a critical Reynolds number above which the turbulence is supposed to exist, of the order of 3 × 10⁻⁵. So the reciprocal of that would be something like 3 × 10⁻⁴, 3 × 10⁴, about here. Actually, this experiment is reporting turbulence even below that, at least on this side of the line. Now, if that's correct, then the torque in our experiment should be on the order of 6 Newton meters produced by this effect, and we should be able to measure that to a couple of percent. Unfortunately, given our rather short geometry, it's also comparable to the torque provided by, or that would be provided by Ekman circulation if we made the end caps co-rotate with the outer cylinder. We hope to have a lower Ekman circulation than that because of the differentially rotating end caps, but just to give you an idea of what the competition is when you're trying to measure such effects. So I think to sort this out, you know, it'll be very important to have as much control as possible over the angular momentum and angular velocity profiles. Zeta, it went by rather fast. If you're familiar with the notation, angular velocity going like r to the minus q, that's commonly used, so q would be 3/2 for Keplerian, 2 for constant angular momentum. This is just 2 minus q. It's the dimensionless vorticity, d log angular momentum, d log r. So Keplerian is 1/2. And the question, so there is this issue about where nonlinear turbulence can occur. I mean, everybody agrees that, well, it's known. How much time am I going? I'm about halfway through. Okay. So it's known there are many terrestrial flows, non-rotating flows, which are turbulent even though they're formally linearly stable. Flow in a pipe, plane correct flow, and so forth. The constant angular momentum Couette flow with zeta equals zero, r squared omega constant, is mathematically very similar to plane Couette flow, flow past a straight wall or something. And there's general agreement that that can be nonlinearly unstable. But the question is, as we increase zeta, above zero, we go to an increasingly positive angular momentum profile, when does the flow become laminar? And does the nonlinear instability extend all the way to, it's a possibility that the battery is dying on me. does it extend all the way to Keplerian flow? So this is a controversial issue, and we'll hear more about it later today. you want to? Thanks. Okay. All this slide says is that there's a history of theoretical and experimental studies of magnetized Couette flow, but for reasons I think I don't have time to go into, MRI per se was never studied in a Couette flow, either experimentally or theoretically, until the last few years. You can ask me why later, but the short answer is it's because it's very hard experimentally to get into that regime because of the relatively large diffusivities of the best available liquid metals. Okay. So we have done a local analysis, which was referred to in the last talk, local axisymmetric WKB analysis, and we've done a quasi-global analysis in which we pretend that the cylinders are infinitely long, so we can separate the vertical dependence, but then we do a global analysis in radius. And sad thing I have to report is that after some amount of effort to do that, one finds out that although the linear eigenfunctions have interesting boundary layer behavior that depends on the magnetic boundary conditions and so on, the actual growth rates are very well predicted by WKB if you simply say that the radial wave number is equal to pi over the gap width. And that's shown, that agreement is shown here, but I won't go in. Okay, so the second real experiment we did was in water. And it looked like this. So acrylic, outer cylinder and end caps, 10 centimeter gap and 10 centimeter height, so even squatter than the current design. The whole thing was mounted on a potter's wheel. This is a very, very low budget operation here. And the inner cylinder driven by a separate motor, so we could get both rotating. But the end caps were rigidly co-rotating with the outer cylinder because that was rigidly co-rotating with this potter's wheel. Okay, and I won't bother with the movie. We could operate this system in a hydrodynamically unstable and stable regime, particles seated in the flow and a fast framing camera to visualize it, and sure enough, one looks turbulent, one not. Now, the first important lesson of this, not really a surprise, but nice to see, is that because of those end caps, one doesn't get the ideal Couette flow at all. Okay. The ideal flow for the given angular velocities of two cylinders, which I forget in this case, but it would be a slightly really stable case, is shown in red. The actual data at various heights shown in various colors, sorry, John, doesn't really matter because we all pretty much agree, is quite different. This is linear velocity versus radius. And you see it's almost flat, as if this thing were trying to be a galaxy or something. Okay. But it's shown at various heights. The green is 1 centimeter below the top cylinder. The yellow, which is essentially invisible, by contrast, is the midplane. Okay. And that's because of Ekman circulation. So I didn't know what Ekman circulation was when I was a graduate student. I learned that later. But to remind you, this is the reason that when you stir your coffee, it slows down in tens of seconds rather than 20 minutes, which is what you would get if you made a naive estimate based on the viscosity of coffee and the size of the cup. So basically, a boundary layer, viscous boundary layer forms whose thickness is proportional to the square root of the viscosity. And so the fluid in the interior is essentially inviscid, but it gets, in a laminar solution, pumped into this boundary layer and spun up or spun down to agree with the boundaries on a time scale, which goes like the rotation period times the square root of Reynolds number rather than the Reynolds number itself. Okay. So even though the viscosity is small, it's very important in modifying the flow. Okay. The piece of good news that we got out of this is that even though our simulations only went up to Reynolds numbers, so these were axisymmetric, incompressible simulations, not with Zeus, but with a code written by Akira Kageyama, a geophysicist from Japan who was with us for a year. Even though we could only go up to sort of 3,200 in those simulations, we got excellent agreement with the measured flow, and we put in the right boundary conditions. We directly measured Ekman spin down by allowing the flow to come to equilibrium with the spinning cylinders and then abruptly stopping them and measuring what happened next. Typical spin down times are in the order of 10 seconds at Reynolds number of a million. And then something which really personally amazed me, which is that if we took the simulations and measured the spin down time in simulation up to Reynolds number 3200 and then did a free fit to these points without even constraining the exponent of Reynolds number, which came out quite close to the expected value, it almost passed through the experimental point up at Reynolds number of a million. So that's an extrapolation over 2.5 orders of magnitude. What that says is that up to that Reynolds number, the boundary layer was not too far from laminar. Okay, so we went to a design with these differentially rotating end caps. We talked ourselves into the notion that we could get away with just two. Ideally, of course, you'd want a very large number of rings, but that would require a very large number of motors. And this is what it looks like. In the schematic, you can see the two annuli here, steel bars around the outside to contain those 25 atmospheres when it's gallium. And we'll be in the water phase, which we hope to be doing this summer. We've done water experiments before, but only minimal ones in this apparatus because there were problems with the bearings and it was leaking, the seals, et cetera, and all that has supposedly just been fixed. We'll have acrylic to begin with so we can diagnose the flow with particles and laser flow symmetry. And then we'll replace this outer cylinder with steel. The inner one is always steel, so more or less insulating boundary conditions, insulating end caps. That's pretty important because you don't want the field lines to attach to the boundary. Ideally, your boundary conditions should be either perfectly conducting so that the field lines can't penetrate them, or perfectly insulating, and one is easier to achieve than the other, or approximate. This is what it looks like. I think we've seen that before. You can see the drive belt for the inner cylinder, motors up here, and drive belts for the annuli and outer cylinder. Diagnostics, the most basic one is torque, but in order of increasing difficulty, we can also do we have pickup coils to get external magnetic perturbations. Cosmologists are very good at that. Surface pressure measurements can help us to diagnose the mean flow profile, and to the extent we can afford it, ultrasound. So just a few words about simulation. So we have also one graduate student to do the hard work of simulation. His name is Wei Liu. He's a plasma physics student. He has modified Zeus 2D, so this is axisymmetric Zeus, to include viscosity and resistivity. And so first of all, we did last fall some purely hydrodynamic tests. So these are contours of toroidal velocity, azimuthal velocity, as computed in a flow where the end caps rigidly rotate with the outer cylinder, like our old experiment, by Akira Kageyama's incompressible code and Zeus. And if we run Zeus at the same fluid Reynolds number and a peak Mach number based on the inner cylinder of about a quarter, we get agreement at the few percent level, which is very gratifying. You'd like... Yeah, well, not for the current experiment, but for the older one. So it's that's why it looks square. Okay. So you see there are basically two Ekman circulation cells here. I didn't go into detail, but going like this and going like this, and they meet in the middle in something we sort of we call a jet. Okay. Well, you're paying. Okay, so the CFL, the law, smaller you make this, the greater a penalty you pay in the CFL condition, but only a factor of 4 here, which is quite acceptable. It's a pretty efficient code. In fact, the CPU times, actually, the original incompressible code was very inefficient because it was solving Poisson's equation essentially by brute force. And even after we implemented Fourier transforms in the vertical direction, these two were comparable. Zeus is really a very lean code. Resistivity is another story. Because the resistivity is so high, a brute force explicit treatment of magnetic diffusion forces you to a small time step. We're accepting that for the moment. But I think there are many ways to deal with that, even in an explicit code, like advancing, doing the resistive substep on a downsampled mesh. Because there isn't going to be much structure on small scales in the magnetic field, so why should you accept the stability limit that's imposed by them? And this is about a week old, maybe 2 weeks. This is a sample calculation, not very realistic conditions, because we have done calculations, but I'm not sure they're completely debugged for the finite height with no slip split end caps. But this is for vertically periodic conditions with a conducting inner and out, perfectly conducting inner and outer cylinders. And what you're seeing here is the poloidal flux function and stream function. I'm nearly done. So I talked early on about axisymmetric, nonlinear saturation. In an accretion disk, there's so much energy in the orbital motion that the mode simply cannot saturate by substantially changing the angular velocity profile. There isn't enough energy flow. That is quite different in the laboratory. There's a limited amount of energy, limited difference in velocity across the radial dimension. And so the mode can saturate by modifying that profile, but of course we continue to drive the system. However, with perfectly insulating or perfectly conducting boundaries, the only explicit torque on the fluid is viscous in these layers. Now, at an early stage, I suggested that we should run a radial current. You should put electrodes on the entire inner and outer surface and run a radial current. And then in the vertical field, that gives you a J cross B force, which, if you work it out, ideally gives you an exactly constant angular momentum profile. And then you could spin the whole thing slightly on a table to get stability. But I don't know. My colleagues weren't too enthusiastic about a theorist's suggestion. So anyway, so with now, in this situation, those of you familiar with the 2D shearing box calculations know that what you would expect to see in that case is the so-called channel solution, which is basically the linear axisymmetric MRI mode going to arbitrarily large amplitudes, and field lines wandering off to infinity in plus and minus radial distance. They can't do that here because of the conducting walls. So what happens in this case is the lines just go up the edge and then they square off, as you see, and stop. We'd get a somewhat different answer even if we just made the boundaries insulating, which would be nearer reality. So I'm done, basically. This is where we are and our plans for the next year, and I'll take questions at this point. Thank you very much.
Elliot. So you mentioned trying to minimize Ekman circulation by changing the rotation of the end caps. Is this something you can simulate to see how effective that will be? Or
yes, we have simulated it, and in fact we designed the current apparatus on the basis of hydro simulations, which indicate that if you split the end caps into two annuli, instead of two big Ekman cells in the whole thing, you get about 4 cells, I think it is, that are smaller and near the top. Maybe it's 6. Anyway, they're smaller radially and also smaller vertically, and near the hydrodynamic simulations indicate that in the bulk of the fluid we get closer to the desired profile. That's without magnetic field. Recently we've started to do simulations with the imposed field, and it's more complicated. But I'm not prepared to really present those because I'm not sure that it's done right. In the end, I think what we'll probably do experimentally is spin the fluid up, which takes about 20 seconds, or maybe 100 seconds actually, without magnetic field, and then let the field diffuse in, which happens on a time scale of about 10 milliseconds, so that we are starting from a profile that we think we can predict.
I would like to make two comments about the nonlinear hydrodynamical instability mechanism, and especially about the data, because, well, I'm going to give a talk this afternoon, but I'm not going to say anything about the experiments. I won't have time. One of the first comments is about the beta viscosity model. If you reinterpret the data differently, that is, look at them in a different way, you see that this thing comes out only on the cyclonic, for cyclonic rotation, not on for anti-cyclonic one, which is the one which is relevant for Keplerian flows. And also, this thing comes out when the relevant scale in the problem is the radius and not the gap. So that in a thin disk, anyway, even if independently of the cyclonicity of the flow in a thin disk, it's relevant. And that's something it takes a little while to understand, but that's the first comment.
I think I agree with you on the second point, if I understand it. That prescription in a disk would be quite non-local, because it doesn't have the disk thickness in it at all.
Yeah, but it's worse than that.
Yeah.
It's worse than the local. It's basically, actually, from the data, you can understand that it's relevant because you're not in this regime as soon as the aspect ratio is of order 1/10, for example. What was the other comment? The other comment is that I've been looking at this with Olivier Dauchot, actually, who was one of the experimenters involved in the experiment. And one of the things which is kind of obvious, it's too close. A bit lower, okay, sorry. Is that on the anticyclonic side of the flow in the experiments, the flow is much more perturbed by Ekman circulation than on the cyclonic side. And that's one of the reasons, probably one of the reasons which make the Reynolds number so low in the experiment. But these are my only two comments about that.
So what's your opinion about the interest in going to Reynolds number of 10 to the 7 in an apparatus like this?
My opinion is that for the experiments themselves in the Keplerian-like regime, it's awfully difficult to find something which is not completely biased by the Ekman circulation.
I tend to agree. I mean, I think if we were only interested in the hydrodynamic problem, we would have built a different apparatus. It would be much longer. But my view is that we have this apparatus anyway. Nobody's been in quite this regime before, so we're going to study it. But probably only for this summer. And then we'll put the field in the Gallium.
Can you comment on the fact that in all these experiments, the rotation itself, the rotation profile you get, is set up by the fact that you have viscosity.
Yeah.
Whereas in an accretion disk, the rotation is set up by some external body force, namely gravity, and what differences that might introduce.
Well, as far as the linear behavior is concerned, that is thought to depend only on the angular velocity profile that actually obtains when it grows. So I'm not too concerned there. As far as nonlinear behavior is concerned, obviously there's a competition between the angular velocity, the instability, which in our case we think will be actually trying to make the angular momentum profile steeper in contrast to what we heard in the last talk. In other words, move angular momentum. Competition with that and what's driving the system. In the disk, it's essentially gravity, centrifugal equilibrium. In our case, the way we're doing it now, it's just this viscous driving, which is really quite weak. We may actually at some point try current drive, which would be much stronger.
You do get Keplerian profiles, so can you control that?
In principle, we could go to Keplerian, but then According to our linear analyses, we would not see MRI. The angular momentum gradient is too strong for the rotation rates and field strengths that we can afford, which, you know, are up to about 4,000 RPM in the inner cylinder and maybe 3/4 of a Tesla in the field. So we'll be operating at zeta 2 minus q of order a tenth. So stable, but not very stable. For the hydrodynamic explorations, we could go to substantially, I mean, we could stop the inner cylinder altogether if we want to.
So I wanted to ask you and also the previous mm-hmm. speaker just a little more general question. So it's a beautiful experiment, but I just want to ask more generally, looking mm-hmm. into the future. First of all, for the magnetic case, is there any way to experiment with large-scale field that can exert large-scale stresses and transport angular momentum along the field, wherever it will go? Obviously, you won't be driving a wind, but maybe you will have some load there that could exert, like, absorbable Fein waves or something that could exert a back torque, so you could transport angular momentum vertically with a large-scale field. Is there any way to model?
You want vertical transport?
Yes. Is there any way to as an alternative to radial transport in disk, as we heard that young stellar objects have strong evidence for vertical transport, is there any way to experiment with that?
I think there is. We have no plans to do this, but we could, for example, make the end caps copper. And then you could drive one end and measure a torque on the upper end through the fluid. That would be like the old Muscovius solutions.
Muscovius, yeah. Something along the lines. I think it would be interesting. I mean, not necessarily with, something along these lines.
So what start do you think we would learn from that?
Well, we would like to learn if we can actually take we'll learn just the same thing that we learned about MRI, that it hasn't been tried experimentally yet. We would learn whether we can take angular momentum bulk from the bulk of the flow and take it up.
I should say, I think my colleague, Hantal G, really sees a career ahead of him in doing sort of laboratory astrophysical experiments. He's already been working on collisionless reconnection for several years. But I think specifically in liquid metals, he's done a little work on magnetized surface waves, and then there's this, and I think he hopes to go on to greater things. So I suppose we could do a jet experiment where we had a rotating disk in a small on the bottom of a larger liquid metal flow.
I want to
like
encourage
that.
You to do that. You were not here earlier this week.
It just takes a long time to do anything.
I know, but
it's not like theory.
But it's I mean, I just want to impress on you and maybe again on other people, we don't have that much representation here from the young stellar object community, but this seems to be the dominant mode in young stars, at least in restricted regions of the disk. And my last really quick question is to ask also earlier, there's another mode. You talked about the nonlinear Couette effects. Mm-hmm. I mean, so that's granted, but there's this other effect where you induce the non-normal type of operator. In fact, the work that Regev did recently based on this, I forget the first name of the guy in Harvard, but his collaborator was Ian Nono. Sorry?
Oh, you're talking about Narayan and...
No, not Narayan. This is non...
Urhan and Regev.
Moore and Regev, that's right.
Yes.
And that along these lines. Is there a way to experiment with that?
Well, that's a purely hydrodynamic incompressible... that's actually pretty accessible to simulation, and there are people who've looked at it. I'm actually at some level working with Joram Lithwick and Jim Stone on such things, but I think that's 2D, and there's some reason to think that 2D is very different from 3D, which we could go into later over lunch or something. Well, a high Reynolds number 2D flow, I'm not sure.
So if you do see hydrodynamic instabilities, is the MRI experiment kind of out the window, or is it just going to be...
out the window? No, I think we'd be interested in measuring quantitatively then the relative importance of those instabilities and MRI in transporting angular momentum. Whatever you think of that data model, it predicts a torque which is you know, not larger than what we expect to see from MRI. So,
presumably.
The real challenge will be, as we see such an instability, understanding whether it's entirely a function of the boundaries or whether it really is something in the bulk. And that'll be an interesting challenge.
Right, but you'll be hard-pressed to do anything with MRI simulations in that case, right, probably?
Well, we might, if the hydrodynamic effects were on small scales, we might be able to represent them by a larger effective viscosity, and we can do MRI in the presence of viscosity. If they take the form of large-scale circulation cells, then I'm not sure it makes sense to talk about an instability when the background state isn't a magnetic equilibrium, when the angular velocity is not constant on field lines. But you can still, as in the previous talk, you can still look for differentially the changes in the transport rate as the field is increased.
The previous speaker kind of touched on it, but what are the prospects for using higher viscosity, lower Prandtl number, or higher Prandtl number materials? Are there any hopes? Or?
That are good conductors. I don't know. Some sort of granular flow with copper sand in it, and this is the time to bring out that book we were discussing. Huh? it's tough, and you know. For example, if you wanted to add something to a liquid metal, you'd probably want to make sure that not only was it not chemically reactive in the case of sodium, but gallium is actually pretty much so, but it's neutrally buoyant and all that. I'm not sure how you can do that.
Do you think that the fact that there's no explicit resistivity or viscosity in the Zeus and the low magnetic Reynolds number might warrant also trying, if possible, one in which there is an explicit simulation with a code in which there is an explicit.
Well, we do have an explicit viscosity.
Oh,
we've added.
Okay, sorry, I missed. My fault. Yeah.
We can do experiments at the experimental magnetic Reynolds number. It's just a little painfully slow because the way we're doing the resistive step now, it's completely explicit and it's on the same mesh as the velocity, so we have to use a small time step. But we have done that.
I have a question about the hydrodynamic part of the experiments. Mm-hmm. If the Ekman circulations are believed to be such a major effect, is there an attempt made to sort of control them by or vary them and see how much a contribution they make to actually torque, to the actual torque exerted? As compared to the instabilities you're looking for.
Well, that'll be pretty much the first order of business, aside from making sure that the apparatus doesn't, you know, blow up or something, when we get going this summer. It wasn't possible before because, you know, we didn't have this independent control on the NCAPs, but now we do. So we'll be measuring the torques on all four surfaces.
And
varying the relative speeds and trying to understand what's going on in terms of the hydro simulations. And also visualizing the poloidal circulation that we get out of that.
Right. Question? If not, it's coffee time now. Thank you.